So really what I'm hearing here is benchmarking, and we're talking about benchmarking and analytics. So benchmarking and analytics are just connected in such a way that you get your benchmarking data from the analytic analysis of the data.
Correct. And there's a lot of things you can do with that, Jim. For example, the big catchphrase right now is everybody's trying to figure out how to do alternative equipment maintenance programs, AEMs. And especially in the smaller hospitals where they don't have the experience-based data to work with, they're trying to figure out, what should be in an AEM. And so we've got the ability through analytics and benchmarking to be able to show them, based on their inventory, the composition of their inventory, what would be the most likely candidates, what has the highest probability of being successful within an AEM program. Now, I have to give you the disclaimer that we do not recommend for or against anything within an AEM program because there is a very strict requirement that the AEM or the hospital have an on-site expert that makes those decisions, and we are not capable of doing that, nor do we claim to be. All we can do is to say, if you have an XYZ device, in 78% of the cases, that showed up in an AEM equipped list, and in this particular device, it was in 6% of the hospitals that we surveyed. And so you can take it from there that the probability is a 78% one is a better candidate. It's the low-hanging fruit type thing. And it works in two ways. I call it an AEM jumpstart because we designed the product to help people that didn't have an AEM program to get started a little bit faster and easier. But what we've also found out is there's a huge level of interest by people that already have it to justify and validate what they've already decided to put into the program. And we can also share with them the most, not only what product should be included, but what the analytically, what the majority of them are saying is the probable PM frequency, which is potentially even more important. There's so much around the preventive maintenance, there's so much information wrapped around it, and so much pushback on some of the basics, that it becomes a very muddy water for a lot of people. As an example, a major Midwest hospital that I work with very closely spent several years and a quarter of $1 million studying the impact and results of PMs on mean time between failure. And they found that at the end of the day, there was very little, less than 2% of a positive impact that could be directly attributed to a shortened PM schedule or maintaining the same schedule. It didn't really have any impact on mean time between failure. So a lot of hospitals are starting to look at what makes more sense and are trying to come up with reasonable options because, as you know, we're all trying to operate and do more with less. We're continuing to add more and more and more pieces of equipment. The headcount has not gone up as fast as the equipment has. And so, as technicians, we're expected to maintain more equipment. And, the option you've got is that you can't change the corrective maintenance things when something breaks, but you can certainly look at ways to elongate the cycle for preventive maintenance, and that's what we're trying to do. Another product that works off analytics that absolutely shocked me was that I surveyed some of my customers to find out how they did budgeting and found that 100% of them, with no exceptions, they all said the same thing, that they took the previous year's budget. And senior management, for the most part, told them that they would be able to increase by 2%, or they had to take 3% out of the budget, or they would be given some number to work with, predicated on their previous budget. So I asked the sort of a rhetorical question of what correlation is there between your budget and the actual inventory that you're maintaining? And universally, the comment came back, there's none. So what I was asking is, if you're in a well-funded hospital that's got a lot of money, and especially like in a teaching hospital, for example, where there's a tremendous turnover of equipment and there's a lot of new stuff coming in, a lot of it that's warrantied, or that even when it's out of warranty, it's still new, versus the opposite end of the spectrum where you've got a hospital that's got a lot of old legacy equipment that they're trying to keep running with, you know, duct tape and baling wire, there's a huge variance in how many people it may take to do that. So we developed a product, again, using analytics, where we could take the hospital's specific inventory and measure the, again, the average mean time between failures, looking at PMs and the frequency of PMs and CMs and yada, 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 to be able to come up with a factor of time that would be needed for that specific device. And we then were able to come back and, you know, working with the normal allowable hours in a person in a full-time equivalent, and come back to the hospital and say, okay, you should theoretically have X number of people. Now, is it perfect? Of course not. Of course not. There's always people that get pulled into special projects or have limitations for one reason or another, but at least it's a guideline, it's a start. I told the story in there, and it's worth repeating, about one of my customers that the hospital had a stated efficiency, labor efficiency expectation of 85%. By his measurement, his people were operating at 87.5% efficiency, meaning they were above the company's expectations. And yet, they'd only reached 91% of their PM completions. Now, in their case, they've got a lot of older equipment. It breaks. They're spending more time on CMs than they should be because the equipment's old. They couldn't get to as many of the PMs as they wanted to. And in this case, management came to him and said, you know, you've got three open personnel recs. We're not going to make you get rid of anybody, but we're not going to let you fill those jobs. And his response was to take them a complete inventory list and ask the chief operating officer to identify with a yellow marker which piece of equipment you don't want me to PM this year, because I've proven to you that I'm above the expectation in efficiency per person, and I still don't have enough time left to get to the PMs. And so, by simple mathematics, I need more people. Now, that sword cuts both ways, and you could find that, but the prudent manager, I hope, would take those analytics and say, well, gee, I don't want to lose two people or not be allowed to replace two people that left of other reasons. But in fact, what if the analytics shows you don't need those people? Mm-hmm. You know, could you run a more efficient operation because you figured out that our particular performance standard for PMs is far longer than somebody else's, the mean time or the best in class? Can we raise our performance standards in order to get more done with less? Because I think that's where we're going eventually. And, you know, after yesterday's presentation, I was surprised. I had several people come up to me that said, you know, the rumblings are starting in the C-suite, where they're asking for performance evaluations and, you know, the proof of concept that you're saving us money or making us money or whatever the case may be. And the average department doesn't have the ability to defend that position. And I would tell you that with one of my first customers that I spoke to, he said, you know, this is not rocket science. He said, there's nothing that you're going to give me that I couldn't theoretically pull out myself out of the CMMS, except for a couple of points. Point one is, I don't have the time, I don't have the resources, and I don't have the in-depth knowledge of you know, SQL statement writing and all that to extract the information that I need, nor is it prudent for me to spend that kind of time doing it when I can get it from you. And number two, I have no clue what the rest of the world is doing. And ultimately, and this is not a professional statement, but a personal one, ultimately, I think that's why the AMI and the ECRI benchmarking versions, AMI has actually stopped theirs, and ECRI, I think, has put theirs in limbo, because they had nothing to measure your performance against. So they had tools that could theoretically measure what, you know, what you were doing, but they had nothing, no data to compare it to. And that's why I thought it prudent to get this started, utilizing the resources of a company that had 16 to 20 million work orders and 4 million device codes. So
just to maybe sum this up, So what you folks are working towards is your product to utilize the database information from your clients and then to be able to extract the benchmarking analytical information. You take the client's data and then you're able to sift through it and pull out these data points that can help them to be more efficient.
It's a simple comparison process, Jim, when you stop and think about it. I say simple, I would hate to have to write the code to make it do this, but you know, to understand it, what we're basically doing is taking the data points from the customer, comparing it to the data points of 3,000 hospitals, and saying this is what the average of those 3,000 have done, and this is what the best guys have done, and let you see, again, by equipment type, by device code, by location, by person, by any measurement, slicing and dicing any way you want, how your performance compares. And you know, that's essentially what we're trying to do, yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to talk with me, and we're looking to take this interview and put it on our website and share the information that hopefully will help a lot of folks.
Well, I appreciate it.
Be more efficient. Thank you so much.
All right. My pleasure. Thanks.
All right. You bet. So that is Doug Brown with Superior Analytics, and that is a division of Phoenix Data Systems.